City. I'm on the run. The highway is my home.
Hi, everybody. KSAV ready to go, kicking off another evening of live programming on ShareaVision Radio. And as usual, at least on these Tuesdays, we're going to start it off with Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby. That'll be followed by Perfectly Frank at 6:30, Talking Television with Dave White at 7:30. These are all Pacific times, and Sidewalks of San Francisco at 9 o'clock Pacific. Before we go to our hosts, I wanted to bring up the fugitive petition to have the fugitive released on DVD. We have a link to that on our sponsors and friends page at KSAV, and I checked it today, and it's at 388. So I think that's doing pretty well. Incidentally, I am signature number one on there, but that's as it should be. All right, I know most people prefer to hear me run my mouth, but I'm not going to. We're going to bring on the hosts, Kitty and Bobby Near. You guys there?
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Kitty. How you doing?
Hey, Bob.
All right, then, without further ado, here's Bobby.
Yes. Okay, well, we're here this evening to discuss Never Wave Goodbye Part 2. We did part one, or at least parts of it, 2 weeks ago. And I had an email last time from JC, who's a member of our group, and I wanted to read one paragraph out of it, because, or two paragraphs out of it, really, because it deals with location filming, which is really very important in this episode. And he writes on here, looking at what The Fugitive had aired and what was in the can, it would seem Never Wave Goodbye was a radical departure. The second and third episodes aired were what one poster referred to as hillbilly shows. Those took place in rural, small towns, backwoods towns. And he writes, instead of the rural backlots, what we got was probably a risk for a new show, a two-parter. There was extensive and exciting location shooting in L.A. and Santa Barbara. And in part one, when there's a big bus chase, he writes in that the camera was actually on the bus instead of using rear projection. I think he makes a good point here. When we talk about this episode, we tend to talk about the story, about Karen, about the love story and things like that. But I just watched this again about 20 minutes ago, at least part two, and the location filming in this episode is extraordinary. I mean, in part two, they're actually in the very tragic ending. When they part on the beach, they're really on a beach. There really are waves in the background crashing up on the rocks. They're standing on the rocks. Karen and Richard are climbing rocks. And there's a scene where they're in a cave, and unless I'm extraordinarily naive, it appears to me they really are in a cave or right near the front of it, and the camera is looking out towards the beach. You can see David Jansen walk out of the cave onto the sand, and it looks very real. I just think that's amazing for a TV show, especially back in the 60s, and I don't think that this episode would look anything like it does or would be remembered the way it is if that location shooting did not take place. And I was reading The Fugitive Recaptured earlier this evening also and noted that the writer of this story, Hank Searles, if that's how you pronounce his name, had a experience in sailing, and he knew an area in Santa Barbara that he thought would be perfect for his story. There was a sail-making shop there, and there was a beach there. So everything they went to was because of him. It's one of those rare instances, I think, where a writer says, listen, I wrote a story, and I know where you want to film this, and I think it really makes a difference in this story. It's really remarkable. What do you think, Kitty? Did you notice that when you watch it?
Yeah, I think it's very well done. And I think our emailer brings up a really good point that it is a complete departure from what we've seen in at least the two previous episodes.
Yeah.
Because the first episode, of course, we know that was actually filmed, I believe that was in Tucson, where they filmed that, and they really were there. But those second and third episodes, there's really nothing too memorable about the filming of it. It looks like it's just pretty much on a back lot or in the hills. But, yeah, it's very obvious in this one that they went to various different places to do filming, and it's very well done. And I agree with with what you said about the whole bus thing and being in the cave. It's just very well done.
Yeah, there's a great deal of atmosphere created there, and even in part two, when we have the part where they're in the dinghy and then in the raft, and they're trying to avoid the sharks, it's done very well. When you consider the time frame, it's over 40 years ago, and it really looks realistic. Of course, we know they're on a back lot. We know they're in a big tank.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that instance, I'm sure that was in a very controlled environment.
Sure. Yeah, but when you get to the end of it and they're on the beach, I mean, Susan Oliver and David Jansen really got wet. They really went this extra step. You know, that couldn't have been very pleasant to be there all day or however many days it took to film that and to be wet all the time. So I think that's really good and really, really adds to this. We very rarely ever talk about that because we're so wrapped up in the story and everything, but it adds a lot to it. So I have to agree with JC in this entire two-part. There's really no other episode where location filming means that much, I think, except when we get to the finale, to the judgment, which they filmed in a abandoned amusement park. But by that time, the story has overwhelmed the location. It doesn't really mean.
Let me just inform you, you've got a caller. Steve from Florida is on the line.
Oh,
you take him
like,
whenever you
Steve.
Like.
All right, let's take Steve, and then after that we'll do Linda's email.
All right, then Steve, to come out of the green room, leave the buffet alone in there, and welcome to Talking Fugitive.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Kitty, Bob, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to mention briefly, I know it's a short show tonight, Never Wave Goodbye, I mean, it's just the cream of the crop of the entire series. In fact, it's probably the cream of the crop of any series. If I had to pick one episode of any series on television, it's got to be this. Of course, Susan Oliver is a big part of that. But also, you know, we're losing track. There was some other fine acting. Robert Duvall, who later went on to become very big.
Oh, sure.
Will Kaluba, who I don't know too much about, but I'm sure that... That he had his day. I believe you did a write-up on him, Bob, a while back on your group, but I really don't remember that much about him, but I really enjoyed his role.
I'm not going to remember seeing him back then, but, you know, he was already an old man.
I'm sorry? I'm sorry. I think I'm losing you. I'm breaking up here.
No, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. That's better. And like you were talking about the location filming, and then there was the Kimball-Girard angle, like this is the first episode where we really see Girard. I mean, the whole thing was great from start to finish. There's nothing else I can even add that hasn't been said.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that we see the lengths Girard is willing to go to get Kimball, because he is this instrument of the law.
Yeah, well, they make it very clear to viewers up front that this is what you're going
to
be facing.
Even to the point of risking his own life.
This is what you're going to be facing the rest of the series, should the series last. Of course, nobody knew back then that it would, but, you know, this is the way it's going to be. In other words, and I think what it does is it makes it more compelling to watch the series because you think to yourself, you know what, there really is no apparent resolution in the future here because this guy is going to chase this other guy forever no matter what, and it's never going to let up. I better stay here to see how it gets resolved. I think they did that deliberately so that you wouldn't think to yourself, oh, what is the big deal? All he has to do is go run off to a small town somewhere, get lost in that little town, and nobody will ever find him there. And real fugitives have done that. But what they're showing here is that Girard will go anywhere. He'll go to any small town or any corner of the world. And that makes a difference.
And one line in the show just popped into my head now when they looked down and saw him coming down on the raft, Kimball says, won't he ever quit? Like, won't he quit? Like you said it twice, I believe.
Yeah, that's a big moment, yeah.
Right.
All right, Steve, are you the host of the website?
Yeah, that's me, yes.
All right, well, I was going to tell you, you have a link on there for the petition drive, don't you?
Yes, I do, and I also have a link to your radio station, and I wanted to thank you for putting my link up on your board. When I called in the last time, you told me you did that, and I appreciated that.
Oh, well, certainly, and I'll tell you, I think that on this petition count, you deserve a lot of credit, because since you've put that up there, it certainly seems to be taking off, so a good job.
Well, has it really? I haven't really looked at it lately, but I'm glad to hear that.
388 was the total. All right, Steve.
388.
Thanks very much, and I hope you'll call in again in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, thank you. Take care, Dave, Bob, Kitty. Talk to you next time.
Bye,
okay.
Steve.
All righty, you can read Linda's email. I think we have some time before the break.
All right. Linda has comments on Never Wave Goodbye, Part 2. She says, I think this episode is a defining moment for both Kimball and Gerard in that it establishes to what incredible lengths each man will go to achieve their goal. After this episode, there is no doubt in anyone's mind that this is a fight to the finish. It is also the first face-to-face confrontation between the two men after the escape, always a memorable event. In the movie version, we got the memorable scene where Kimball and Gerard meet, and Kimball says, I didn't kill my wife, and Tommy Lee Jones responds with the classic line, I don't care. In the movie, of course, the two men had never met before. A similar scene occurred in the pilot of the 2000 version, where Gerard says, I will never stop, and Kimball responds, neither will I. Linda goes on to say, on Karen, I think she really loved Kimball, but she had an unrealistic idea of what their life together would be like. She thought they could hide in her obscure corner of the world and live happily ever after. Gerard destroyed that vision. I think events moved so swiftly that she did not have time to contemplate the reality of life with Kimball until they reached the cave. At that moment, I think she began to realize all that she would have to give up for him, and I think Kimball did too. And he loved her so much he began to regret asking her to share that kind of life. One thing seldom mentioned about Karen in this episode is that when she and Kimball saw Gerard capsize, she wanted him to keep running and not stop to see if Gerard was all right. She only followed him down to the beach with a look of resignation. So as much as we like her, she had some flaws also. And you have Ken on the telephone. That's the end of Linda's email. So back to you.
Let me comment on a part of Linda's email. We can take Ken after the break. I certainly agree with everything that she said, but in her last paragraph, when she kind of takes Karen to task for not wanting to save Gerard, I agree with that, but, you know, right, I just watched it a little while ago, and towards the end of it, she has her own plan, and the plan will be, first of all, when she says that they should just leave, she thinks he's already dead, because Gerard is on the beach, and his eyes are closed, and he's barely breathing. She may think that he's going to expire right there, but he opens his eyes, he begins to talk. She comes up with a different idea, and she decides that Kimball will go, he will leave her there, he will go and get help. Gerard will probably expire on the beach anyway. And then she will and she will stay there, but she will join him later on. And there's no part, I could not find any part in this last half hour of this episode in which he really talks to her about what life on the road could really be like or how they might be hounded and that she might have to live the lifestyle he lives. He doesn't talk about that to her. He doesn't mention what he's been through, not having a place to live, not having any money, always having to look over your shoulder. Because, you know, unless everybody buys that they actually died, even if Gerard's not around anymore, you're still looking at a very difficult life. And I agree with Linda that this is a flaw in Karen, because she's literally willing to let Gerard die right there on the beach. Kimball can't do that. He's a doctor. It's impossible. Once Gerard gets washed up on the beach, Kimball has to help him. There's no way out of it. Had he gotten lost at sea, had he just drowned out there and his body not washed up, that would have been a different story, because that was an accident, because nobody made Gerard grab a raft and go after them. So Marley, I think she could have simply said, well, you know, we're leaving. I don't know where he is. All I know is we're getting out of here. But he does show up on the beach. He's still alive, and that changes the dynamics entirely as far as I'm concerned. You agree, Kitty?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think, you know, but I think, too, that the reason why Kimball didn't necessarily talk to Karen about what life would be like on the road is because I think they both kind of, I always kind of got the impression that they both got the idea that if they could really convince the world that they died, then they could just change their names and just go to some obscure place and, you know, disappear and live in obscurity. You know, and I think that was kind of the plan all along that they wanted to do.
What she said to him,
and even at the end, I kind of got the impression that Karen thought it could still become a reality. But what spoiled it, of course, was that Gerard regained consciousness.
Right, and she says to Kimball, she says, we'll go away, and you go away, and
she can join him later.
Yeah, after it blows over, then I'll join you.
Yeah, I mean, because really,
it will blow over.
Because if you think about it, if Gerard had not regained consciousness, she could have told the whole world that she was out on the raft with Kimball, and he fell in, and he died. He drowned, got attacked by the sharks, and there was nothing she could do to save him.
Well, it would have made an interesting second series after this ended to see if she joined them later on for another life on the road, but
they never really
discussed that.
All right, but let's take a quick time out, if we will. When we come back, we've got Ken from Vista on the phone, a couple of more emails, and a whole lot more fugitive to talk about. It's a quick break. We'll be back about 60 seconds on ShareVision Radio.
When you're not talking fugitive Tuesday evenings on KSAV, tune in for Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae. Broadcast every other week at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Susan interviews a variety of interesting guests from a broad spectrum of professions. A great beginning to a pleasant evening of listening enjoyment on KSAV, world-class radio on the World Wide Web.
Might make us a good second episode, too. We could have him there busting rocks in the hot sun. Hey, on alternating Tuesdays, folks, when you're not talking fugitive, next week it's going to be Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae at the same time, 6 p.m. Pacific time. And Susan's guest next week is going to be well-known actor Henry Darrow. So tune in then, and Talking Fugitive returns in 2 weeks on February the 7th. All right, Bob and Kitty, back to you.
All righty. Well, let's talk to Ken.
All right, Ken, your wait is over. Welcome back.
Hi, Dave. Thanks.
Hi.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Kitty.
Hi,
Ken. Come to depend on Ken to call in.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Barely, but I'll work it out.
Well, here in California, we have excellent Internet access, so you don't have to worry about me. I don't know what's wrong with you guys in Florida there.
I don't know. Nothing is right in Florida.
but I had to call in again. You know, I love this episode. You know, Bob and Kitty, I've seen all 120 episodes of The Fugitive.
Right.
But on this episode, I've seen it at least maybe 10 times. I have a copy of it. And it's unique in two aspects. And also, Kitty, I got an important question for you at the end, if we have time.
Okay.
But the first unique aspect about this episode, Never Wave Goodbye, is at the end of part one, Kimball was discovered, you know, by the police, by Gerard, that he was in town. And usually when that happens, Kimball takes off. But not this time in this episode. He stays with Karen. And stays in the same place. I thought that was unique. You didn't see that anywhere else in the series. And then the second point I wanted to make was in the cave where he's talking to Karen, he said something that really, really got to me. He said, Karen, let's stick out our thumb and hitch a ride, and let's go on the run together. He did not say that to any other woman in the entire series, and there are plenty of women that wanted to go with him,
right,
wanted to go on the run with him. They
Although he
him.
Was ready to go on the road with Ellie.
Which one?
He was ready to go on the road with Ellie
you
in
mean,
World's End.
He was
World's
going to go to
End?
Brazil.
That's after Ellie lied to him, right?
True.
Right.
But I think, I don't remember, like, when they the final scene, he didn't ask for her to go with him.
Oh, no. Well, by that point, he learned that that was a lost cause.
Right. Well, the question I have for you, Kitty, I'd like to put you on the spot. Is that okay?
Okay.
You're on the beach, and you're Karen, Kitty. Do you go with Kimball, or do you stay?
Well, basically, there was no choice. Kimball wasn't going to take her at that point.
Uh-huh. What would you have done if you were Karen?
I don't think I would have done that whole thing to begin with. I would have, at the end of part one, I would have said, okay, see you later.
Oh, really?
It was nice and it was fun, but hey, I don't mess with the big M.
Kitty, you know? Don't you think that Kimball's idea is pretty nutty?
Of faking his death?
Yeah, well, of going out on the dinghy and taking food and getting sharks in a frenzy and then cutting themselves and putting it on life jackets.
It is pretty outlandish. I mean, you know, that's, you know, typically when one wants to fake their own death, they usually try to do it some other way. I mean, because you've got that uncontrolled variable of the sharks. You know, the sharks don't care if you're trying to fake your death or not.
Yeah, well, but Ken is right, because it's very unusual for him to come up with that, because he's usually very careful. I consider him reckless at the end of part one. Whether it's because he's taken with Karen or whatever it is, it's really reckless. He gets this idea and he takes it step by step. Well, we'll go do this, we'll go out on the boat, we'll get lost in the fog, and then we'll bring the sharks around, they'll think we're dead. I mean, he doesn't do that the rest of the series. He's always very, that's why he survives, because he doesn't come up with these nutty ideas.
Yeah.
You know, if I was on the road, I might come up with a new idea every week because I'm so tired of running. But
although
not him.
He did come up with the idea of faking his death in that in that episode with Amy, the end of the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
But the fact that there had already been a big car accident helped him with that little ruse that he was trying to do. But I don't think he tries to fake his death again in the series.
Right, and I have to agree with Ken that, you know, this is a special moment in the cave, because he's actually coming up and he's just decided, okay, look, let's throw it all over. And let's hit the road, and you can run with me. And that's what I said earlier. He doesn't stop and say to her, now, I hope you understand what this means. If the world does not buy that we are dead, and there's no guarantee they will, then you can stay with me, but you have no idea what life like this is like. It's a horrible existence. But he seems to be actually willing to do it. You're right, Ken. That's mighty unusual for him. He's usually a lot more careful than that. And, of course, you mentioned the end of part one. He decides to go against type. He decides this one time that he won't run, and Gerard will just move on. But I think Gerard's too smart for that.
Right.
Even if he hadn't found the match and all of that, he's not going to buy that. I think he's always one step ahead, and he's not going to believe any. I don't think he'd believe that, or that he would ever believe that simply finding blood on life jackets indicates that they died in the water. Not him. Mm-hmm. I would buy it, but he won't.
You know, hey, Ken, I want to ask a question now. Am I correct that you would have stayed with Karen? Is that right?
Yes, no matter what.
Okay.
I would have stayed there with Karen and get as much possible time with her.
Okay,
now
here's my question. Is your wife aware of this?
Well, I have a picture of Karen in my office.
Okay, that answers that. You guys go ahead then.
But, you know, most romances, you know, a lot of romances in all the TV series end in a certain way. Either the one person dies or somebody else loves somebody else. But this romance is different because, you know, that final scene, I don't know, it just touches my heart. You know, they're there, they have a kiss,
oh,
and then he
tragic.
Looks at her.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to leave, and he goes off into the sunset, and it's so touching.
The only thing that I think that would have made this episode more touching is if it had aired later in the first season, because really, you know, at the end of part one, where the narrator gets on there and says he's tired of running, and I'm like, oh, give me a break. He hasn't been running that long. I mean, when you think of all the dysfunctional people he has yet to meet, I mean, this has just been a cakewalk for him.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been, I think, more poignant if they had ended the season with this.
I agree.
Absolutely.
You know, instead of the ridiculous way they ended season one with that other episode.
While we have Ken on the phone, before we run out of time, let me just say, Ken, I hope you'll call in on February 7th. Because that's when we're going to take this one step further. Because this whole thing ends tragically, and we know, in spite of what you would have done, Kimball does indeed walk away. I have no idea how, but he does. He does indeed walk away, and she's left there looking as miserable as anybody I've ever seen in my life. She's wet, She's depressed. She just looks dreadful. And she's left there on the beach. They're going to save Gerard's life. And the episode ends and we never see her again. You've got to wonder what happened after that. What happened to Karen? And so we're going to do on February 7th what I call Never Wave Goodbye Part 3, the lost episode, or the episode that never got written, which was what happened to her. Where did she go since the decision has been made to part? Did she go back and run the sail-making company? Did she go back to her other doctor boyfriend? Did she just move on with her life? Did she grieve forever? You know, you got to wonder about all that. We say we like her, but we leave her on the beach for over 40 years, which doesn't seem very fair. So for the first time ever, I think we're going to finally decide, I hope, amongst all of us, exactly where what happened to Karen on February 7th. So I hope you'll call in then, too.
Okay.
All right, Ken. Thanks a lot. Is this fan fiction then, Bob?
This sort of sounds like it.
Ken, thanks for the call.
You might call it fan fiction, except we're going to write it while we're talking about it. I'm not writing it in advance, so I don't know whether that's fan fiction. This is just one of the things is that throughout the series, people who run into Richard Kimball, he always leaves them with something positive in their life. They learn how to live correctly. They learn some moral from him. He saves people's lives. He saves them from being wrongfully accused. This goes on for 4 years. But in Never Wave Goodbye, he leaves behind a disaster. He leaves behind a woman literally with nothing. And as far as I know, that's the only story in the series in which somebody doesn't, I mean, the only good thing she got out of it was she had some time with him. But she's there on the beach. It's tragic, but it doesn't really seem fair to me. So, yeah, I suppose in a way that's fan fiction, but I've always wondered about that. I don't think that everybody in our group loves Karen, and we think she's sincere, and she really loves him, he really loves her. And if that's true, then, you know, let's give her some reason to live.
Well, I'm hooked. I'm going to be here on the 7th.
Well, I know. And yep. Assuming she didn't go live with Ken, which apparently might have happened, then, you know, something must have. I never thought about that. I'm going to have to, this fan fiction now takes a new turn. Perhaps she went to live with Ken, and, you know, I don't know what happens to his wife. But if he's got her picture in his office, I think he's losing it. I don't know. But, you know, it's not bad to have her picture around. It's not bad. Although, had she been alive today, her birthday's coming up on February 13th, she would have been 74. So, you know, it's not quite the same.
Oh.
She was only in her 30s back then.
Okay. You want to hear from Rob?
Yeah, if you can do that real quick in the minute we got left, yeah.
All right. He says, why do you suppose the writers or Roy Higgins allowed Richard Kimball to be so happy in this episode and so melancholy for the rest of the series? Is it because Karen is truly the new love of his life, or did they decide they didn't like this side of Richard Kimball and decided to correct the character trait?
I think it's the second thing. I think they hadn't really decided what they were going to do yet. So they decided to make it that way. But after this, it turns very, very dark. And they decided to keep it that way. There's no comedy, no fun after this, that's for sure. What do you think, Kenny?
Well, I would agree. Although there are some humorous things that do happen in later episodes. Some unintentional, I think.
But is he ever really happy again, even briefly?
But yeah, that is true. I mean, you don't ever really see him happy. With Ellie.
All right, Kitty, I got to stop because the music is on and the time is over. So anyway, February 7th, you guys will be back for part 3 of Waving Goodbye.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot. The rest of you tune in next week for Susan McCrae, and stay tuned now for Perfectly Frank. I'll see you in an hour. This is Retro Radio. Just keep your love alive.